way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face.
Good morning, everybody, and ready for welcome to the first Tuesday coffee chat with John Willis in an awesome shirt. Show us your shirt, John. All right. Jack is here in a very nondescript shirt.
I do have my SOE coffee mug, though.
Oh, look at it wearing out.
Oh, it's worn, bro. This is like what? This is pre-COVID these came out.
Yeah, those are awesome. That was my favorite cup, too.
You should do another run of them.
We should. I like this cup.
Yeah, we get asked the most.
It doesn't go in the dishwasher. That's why that's like that.
You get asked what, John?
We get asked the most for America Post-Apocalypse, USPS. Like, we frequently get people that ask, when are you going to run that again? We've run that. We've done it 3 times. We even have it on a coffee cup.
I like that one. And because people at first don't get what it is. They think it is what it looks like.
Yeah, people talk. They'll come up to you, and they're like, oh, my son works for the post office. I'm like, that's cool.
You need to read a little deeper here. That one in the Dare shirt. The Dare shirt was really genius too, John.
We got a cease and desist for the Dare shirt.
Yeah, put it back up. What are they going to do?
Yep, we got that.
The second time.
And parental guidance suggested or whatever. The Death Row Records actually owns that.
Really?
Huh. Yep.
There's like parody law, though, that you only have to be X percent differentiated and then they can't say that shit.
Well, ours was spot on for the most part.
I mean, they didn't even get Brian when he was doing, Brian from ITS, the Star Wars shit, where he was doing the patches that were clearly rip-offs of Star Wars.
Sure.
If Disney can't get you, then you're in pretty good shape.
Well, most of what it is, a buddy of ours, lawyer, said, hey, ignore those until somebody actually comes in and serves you for real. Those are just companies, and especially with AI now, they're searching all that right now, and they just send that out with a cease and desist, and they want to hit you with a fine, and then that law firm collects the fine. It actually has no association with any of the trademarks at all.
No. I've gotten that for, like, supposedly using an image from Getty Images in, like, 1998,
mm-hmm.
and they want, like, $3,500, and the response to that is get screwed.
Yep.
Right? Like, just jump ass first into a cactus. We're going to sue you. Do you know my address? And then nothing happens.
Yeah. My guy said, don't even reply to them. Give them nothing.
Like, how do they know that the business even still exists that they're going after?
And I mean, at most we've done 120 shirts. Like, by the time anybody sees it, it's gone. It's already done.
It's done.
Yeah, we got one from Playboy, and that one was actually real. My attorney Dana actually spoke to their 17 lawyers.
Oh, wow.
And then we got one. There was another one. We got Super Bowl. We got one for Super Bowl also.
I don't have anything better to do with your time.
I want an Oprah one. Like, that's what I'm waiting for, the Oprah one.
I feel like there's an expiration date on that, dude.
Harpo, they'll really get you, though, because that's her actual production company name that's unique.
Yeah, I think she's kind of in hiding. I think she's got enough of her own problems.
Yeah, you know, if Apple couldn't claim ownership of the word pod, which they tried very, very, very hard to do, then you're probably not making that work, because there's a lot of Oprahs in the world.
Did you see, is it Sierra Mist can no longer use that, right? Because some content creator came up, Sierra Mist hit this content creator, I believe is how the story goes, and says, hey, you can't use this name, it's a registered trademark.
Yeah.
So she gets a lawyer, the lawyer looks into it, the trademark has lapsed, she trademarks it,
oh shit,
and then reverses it on them, so they call it something completely stupid. Brandel was drinking, I go, what is that? He goes, it's Sierra Mist, and then he told me the story about it, and nothing about the name of it now do you think, oh, that's a lemon lime type drink.
You know, that's one of those things, like, you FA'd and then you FO'd.
Yeah, and she did. She let them have it, man.
I've seen it in other things, like smaller things. Like, one neighbor will call code enforcement on another neighbor, and the code enforcement guy walks around the whole neighborhood and He says, yeah, you have to fix your fence. It's leaning too much. But then the guy that called ends up with, like, his entire covering of his porch tore down because of an easement or something. And it's like, you just love to see the instant karma.
Yeah.
That actually happened in my neighborhood. And the code enforcement officer had accidentally written the 4-digit house number of who called in on the complaints that he, like, it had just gone through all the double things. Because I think he just didn't want to be out there getting mad at people about blackberry bushes. And
yeah,
so I went up to the person and I said, hey, I just, you know, I understood you called this in. If it's ever an issue, just let me know directly.
Yeah.
You know, but everybody in the street got nailed for blackberry bushes going over into the alley.
So Jason says Sierra Mist was her real name. I did not know that.
Oh, wow.
Even better. You have to change your real name.
Yeah. Oh. That, I mean, that law, that case has been won by other people who have a trademark.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is dumb.
It is stupid. I don't have to change my name.
Yeah. I own the trademark, so I'm fine.
Trademark should be, is it reasonable to believe that the observer would be confused as to the brand? That's how the law is intended, but of course, laws and enforcement and intentions don't always go together.
And has it previously been used, right? Has it been in print previously? Has it been an ongoing concern?
Yeah.
These are all fun things to talk about from an entrepreneurial standpoint, but I want to talk about the flat earth.
Oh, cool.
So
I think there's a curvature to it.
There's about 100 people in the live. There has to be one of them here.
Yeah.
There's no way you have 100 people without at least one flat tard.
Why is it that nobody in the flat earth conspiracy can come up with actual data to support their claim? It's always like there's a mirror at the edge of the world, so it looks like there's more. There's like all of this stuff that is easily disprovable.
Well,
and yet, so where did the flat earth conspiracy originate, do you think?
My gut is that it's one of those things that, like, we all know that we're lied to. And I think there's certain people, when they uncover a certain amount of legitimate ways that they've been lied to, they become very receptive to, but then you've been lied to about everything. I also think on some levels there are people that they know they're ridiculous, but it's fun to believe a thing. You know, like it entertains them. It gives them a sense of identity and community. And maybe it's a little bit like the supposed Satanists that are actually atheists. And it's just basically a middle finger to normal. See, I don't really know, because rationally it makes no sense. The reason their theories and their supposed evidence is so weak is because it's a preposterous theory. It would be trying to propose the theory that gravity's not real, and we all just believe that we're held down to the earth, but then you can drop shit and watch it fall everywhere, and they say, well, that's not really what it is. There is no way you would disprove such a preposterous theory, because it's so stupid that you can't apply logical evidence to it. I think that's the trap of it. But why? I think it's a combination of people that middle finger to the establishment, and then mental illness. I think there is a certain level of mental illness to some of those people, because you have to deny reality to get there.
Yeah, I think there may be some stem in the first moon landing.
Yeah.
Was that faked or not faked?
I don't believe it was faked at all. And here we have, like, I told you there'd be one.
Yeah.
I told you there would be one. I bet everybody, and I was right. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, we look at those pictures from the 60s, and it looks fake at this point, right? Because they're not very good. And then if you believe that's fake, it's easy to build up this entire story about how the earth is flat. And that was, you know, set up to keep us controlled.
Yeah. And how does he keep, like, one of my favorite things is, I don't remember, it's not Trigger Happy TV, it's Mitchell and Webb, which is like kind of like an SNL with the British angle on it. And they do this skit where they're sitting around at this, like, NASA headquarters or CIA headquarters in like 1959 and planning this moon launch, you know, fake false flag. And the reasoning they come up with is just absurd. And it's like, so, well, then we're just going to do this all in a movie set and we're not going to build a rocket. And they're like, the lady's like, no, we have to build the rocket. Because when people ask how we got to the moon, we'll say that big rocket you saw take off. So the summation at the end of it is the only savings is, you know, you don't have to feed them while they're in space, but actually you have to feed them while they're here. So we actually spend just as much money as if we actually went to the moon. And to me, like, that just kind of cascades into the whole thing. Like, people just want to believe that you're lied to. And the bigger the lie, the better it feels to think you know the truth. But we did 5 moon landings. And I find most of these people keep talking about Neil Armstrong. And it doesn't seem like they understand that you would have had to fake this 5 times in the Apollo program to pull it off. And the sheer volume of people who would have to be part of the plan. There is no way this survives, you know, that level of trying to hide a conspiracy without, you know, credible people pointing it out. I don't know.
Well, here's an interesting comment from Art by Lee Murphy. Flat Earther I knew was all about her superior knowledge and intellect. You just wouldn't understand. Is you just wouldn't understand a viable argument in a debate, Jack or John?
Yeah. When are we supposed to lose gravity for 17 seconds? That's coming up, like, supposed to be in a month or so. You guys haven't heard any of this?
It's actually
a pretty big thing that's been going on for several months now.
Well, explain it.
That's what I have.
Not explain it.
Let me see if I can find it here. Earth is supposed to lose gravity.
Is it because of the pole reversal thing going on?
Well, it's part of that. We actually are supposed to be in a pole reversal, right? That takes about 1,000 years, and we're about 150 years into it.
Okay. I'm on WION, and it says Earth to lose gravity for 7 seconds in August. Wild claim 2 black holes for the alleged glitch.
Yeah, it says here that it's false. August 12th, 26 is a false viral hoax. NASA has confirmed this is a social media misinformation, as gravity is directly tied to Earth's mass and cannot simply be switched off. But there is a lot of content out there that looks pretty compelling. Like, you could be convinced that maybe you should hold on to some shit on that day, you know, for 17 seconds, tie yourself down to some stuff. And then at the same time, you have all the elites building bunkers and building, burrowing in tunnels and, you know, sides of mountains and stuff. So I think everybody thinks that that is happening. The question is, why is it happening? So everybody's always grabbing, you know, whatever answer possibility there is.
I think some of us crave, maybe not some of us, some people crave the apocalypse. Tune in to us. And I've dealt with people in real life where they're like, part of me kind of wants it. And then you start having a conversation with them, like the guy that cut my trees for me, he was like, you know, I think we'd be better off in the end. It would all reset. I'm like, bro, I noticed that you're out there with your chainsaw slinging that around and you don't even have, like, you know, chainsaw chaps, right? Like, if you put that saw into your leg, how long could you be off work until you're bankrupt? And he's like, probably a month or a month and a half. I'm like, you're not prepared for an injury, right? And you're not even taking the one step you could to prevent the injury. And you think you're ready for the hordes to like descend down like freaking Independence Day or some shit, like aliens invading Earth. And you're going to get your gun and you're going to be the hero and you're going to help reset liberty when you're not prepared to like not work for 6 weeks.
Well, if Scott,
you
know, so
you mean,
yeah, this
Scott,
is.
Scott says, tie yourself down. Well, because in 17 seconds, you can get hundreds of feet in the air. And then when gravity returns, you slam to the ground is what they're saying.
Also, that's if the Earth is still rotating, how much further if you disassociate from the Earth? Right?
I'm not way far away. Maybe if John's right, we need like a 9-foot tether so you limit how far you'll fall. And like, yeah, you can watch your time and you can start pulling yourself down so you're closer. Right.
Like Night of the Zombies, right?
Night of the Zombies.
If you heard that there's a comet's going to pass and maybe it turns everybody into ash or zombies, would you just be inside just in case? I mean, when the gravity goes off, I think I would, if I knew that at this time they say this is going to happen, I think I would probably be inside just in case.
So if we were going to get hit by a comet, we would have probably a ton of foreknowledge. multiple confirmations from multiple sources.
Would they tell us?
See, I think with as many amateur observers as we have, that they would tell us, and eventually you'd have to acknowledge it. But something like this, I will give this zero credence. I will immediately file anybody who tries to convince me it's real into the column of mentally ill, do not accept information from this person, and I will go on with my life and I will forget about it. I do not see this as anything remote. There's things that I disagree with, but I'm like, I can understand why you think that. Like this, I don't give a shit where black holes are. This denies the concept of mass generating gravity and curving space. Like, this is not a thing. This doesn't work. It's dumb as fuck, and it probably came from 4chan or 8chan.
So don't put you on the reminder list.
That's no.
Is that a solid? Yeah. Is that a maybe or is that a solid no?
That's a solid fuck no.
It's a fuck no. It's not just a no.
It's a fuck no.
A fuck has now been given on this show.
So. I have reduced my use of that word, but in that case, I believe it is fully called for.
You have now. Reduced. You have yeah. greatly reduced.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. We used to have these shows, and it was fuckity McFuckface.
It is a perfectly good word in the English language that some people have problems with, you know. No gravity. Tie Your Mother Down by Queen, 1976.
Prophetic or not?
I don't think so. Well, it is going to be 2026. That it would be exactly, what, 40 years? 50 years? 50 years?
Oh, no.
It must be true.
Old. We're old.
It can't be 50 years and not be true. I mean, right. an even number like that, well, you know, like the numerologist will tell you that means it means something. And you know, people really think this way. There's some of the stuff I've seen, they make it so plausible. Like I saw this one about there was supposedly, John Dawson won't be seen anymore, supposedly there was this period of time when like half the population was wiped out, and it's only a few hundred years ago, and they got rid of all the orphans, and they had these orphan trains, and there was a mud flood everywhere, and they've hit it all up, and they show some of the earliest photography of these giant cities. And when you look at a city like Paris or London, and this is like, you know, the 1850s, 1860s, you see no people. And they said, well, where are all the people? This, you can look at the angle of the sun, and you can see clearly that this was taken sometime in the middle of the day in London in 1855. Where are all the people? Well, there's a perfectly logical explanation for this. The early cameras, you had to expose the lens for a very long period of time, and it didn't record things that moved. You only got like this still image. So they take these pictures and they fold it into this kind of documentary style film. And then you look in the comments and we've been so deceived and they killed all the orphans and ate them. And like Soylent Green is real. And like the mud flood it had everywhere. And it was like the second Noah, and they hit it and nobody remembers it, even though it's 150 years ago.
So what it's supposed to actually be is that we had a great civilization. They call it Tartaria.
Yeah.
And that we had free energy. And when oil,
yes, that's part of this, yes.
When oil came to be, they wanted to do away with the free energy, right? So they took everybody who remembered before the mud flood, everybody yeah. who remembered that and made it through the mud flood, and they put those people in asylums, and that's why you saw such a mass building of asylums, and that left a lot of kids. And at the same time, we had a lot of towns and major cities burned down, all within like a couple of weeks of each other, all around the United States. So they took all of these children and they moved them to these outskirts where they wanted to do farming, and they used them basically as slave labor. And they're the orphan trains. That's where all the children repopulating those areas to grow food and to do industry. And there actually is a lot of photos of children in factories and mills and such. And a lot of that's because those were orphanages and poorhouses. Almost everywhere you had an asylum, you also had a poorhouse, and at certain times through history, it was illegal to not be employed. So they would take these kids, especially like the churches and stuff. The Catholic yeah. Church had a huge laundry program where they would take these kids and they would use them to do laundry, and they would take mothers who were pregnant and they would sell off or adopt out those babies. And then they were basically indentured to the laundry house for until they were like 25 years old or so.
Yeah, and they even wrapped into it like that this is why we had all these stories in early TV shows and stuff and early radio shows that like made heroes out of orphans, like Orphan Annie and the kids on their own. And then, you know, the billionaire who brought them in and took care of them and all. And so what you've got there is a classic case of using truth, verifiable history to sell an illogical, crazy lie. And that's the best way to sell a lie, is using the truth.
Yeah, how do you critically rip that apart?
There, I could probably spend some of my life energy and force into doing just that.
Like, maybe you could debate a flat earther online.
I was going to do that, and he ran away in the end. That was great. But this thing that we're just talking about now, like, okay, how much of my temporal capital, my life force that shrinks every day, that I could be spending on something else, am I going to spend worrying about tearing apart this retarded bullshit? Unless I can figure out a really creative and fun way to do it as a podcast, I'm not going to bother. And I saw that about 5 years ago. It just, when you were talking about the moon and the flat earth and all, it brought it up and I remembered it.
There's actually quite a bit of it, art by Leah Murphy. There's a lot of photos, and it ties in also with the United States Postal Service. The Postal Service actually had all the records, and the Postal Service did all the record keeping. So anything it is said that they didn't want into future history, that's where it was lost right there. They just removed that. And a lot of it was burnt up also.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not denying we had orphan trains. I'm not denying that before child labor laws, kids were thrown into factories, including a lot of orphans. I'm not denying any of that. Structures in Monaco were actually free energy devices that worked until 1860. Yeah, I'm not willing to go there with anybody.
So the current foster system replaced orphanages, causing us to not have orphanages anymore. Are we better off? Are the kids better off with that structural change than when there were orphanages? That's something, because you hear about all of the abuse in the foster system, and then if you can't fit in the foster system, they basically put you in juvie.
Yeah.
Which is an orphanage run by the state. And that's where we're hearing about child sex trafficking, where they're repeatedly put back in the system and then disappear, right?
Yeah, recovering the same children multiple times through the foster system.
Yeah, so is it better or not better? Any
I think
thoughts
it depends.
On that?
I mean, what did you draw? Like, it's like when you put out, like, you know, draw lots to see who gets decimated in a Roman legion. The guy that draws the black pebble doesn't think it's a very good way to do things, but the nine guys that drew the white pebble are kind of in favor of the program. So what I'm saying is that kid that goes into the foster system could very well end up with a salt of the earth person who deeply cares about children, who is sacrificing some of their own life to take a couple foster children in and provide them a place to be. And they could just as easily end up with a sleazebag. So if you centralize that, the one thing you do have, like, you have a large orphanage, you have 80 kids in one place. There is potential for abuse in anything like this. But then you have one place to kind of keep an eye on per 80 kids, where now you have 80 places to keep an eye on for 100 kids. And so it's hard. I think in that case, maybe decentralized, one of its benefits is it's hard to manage. It's hard to control. It's hard to stop. Right. But in some instances, maybe we're better off with a more central point where we can focus on. But then who does the enforcement? Right. If it's independent agencies that really care about the welfare of children, to give independent ratings to these orphanages that their funding is dependent upon, then maybe we're better off that way. So I don't think there's a great solution to this, but there's definitely room to make it better, however it's done.
There's problems with both of them. Right. I know a couple that adopted a brother and sister, and the sister has just graduated high school and is going to military academy or military college. I think she's got an assignment to West Point. And then Angie has fostered, man, a dozen kids. And look how great how lucky those kids are to be with Angie and her family. And then there's the flip-flop of it, right, where you do hear the horror stories, and it's just for money. Because what does foster pay? It pays, I think it's like it's $1,040 a month or something. I know that locally here, we had a girl that worked for us that lived in a shack across the street. Nobody knew she lived there. She worked here, lived over there. We'd see smoke coming out of the steel building and everything. Nobody knew it was her. And the place caught on fire. So they moved into like the garage. And we heard about this probably 6 months after the fact. I said, why didn't you say anything? She said, because CPS will come in and take my kids and not let, because I have a 2-month-old and a 2-year-old. And because of the situation, they would take in my kids and put them in foster homes and split them up. So she did what she had to do, and she worked her ass off and worked multiple jobs, her and her husband, and they got this all. By the time we heard about it, she had handled it. Mm. But that is the case. If you have like 3 kids and 2 rooms, and each kid doesn't have its own room, depending on the sex of the kids, they will pull these kids out of that house situation, but they'll put them in foster home where there's also not enough room for the kids. You'll have a foster home that has 10 kids living in the foster home, but they'll pull them away from these people who only have 3 kids. So the system, it's just a wreck. And you just hear these, and all we hear is the horror stories. You don't hear the positive of it.
Yeah.
But there's definitely enough of them that it's clearly a problem.
And I've got an episode people can listen to. I'll put it up on the screen for those on the video. I did a rewind of it where all the commercial stuff's out of it. It was episode 239 of my rewinds. A guy named Derek Boodle on defending families from CPS. And he talks about very deeply exactly how this scam works. And we literally do have government employees essentially kidnapping children to move them into the foster system. And they are incentivized in their work progression to do so. That is a real and legitimate problem, to the point where I would have to believe that a kid is either going to be sexually assaulted or physically injured in a severe way to use CPS on another family, because I know how abusive that is. I would have to see that no matter what happens, they're probably better off in the system than out. And that would be a really high bar for me. And that's a shame, because we do have kids in abusive situations where you still think, that might not be great, but the alternative could be way worse. And so it's just another example. I talked about this yesterday, of how people have lost any level of real trust in any of our institutions. I don't trust CPS. No. I don't trust the FDA, right? And those things seem very unrelated, but they're very highly correlated in the pattern of why we don't trust these institutions.
Especially after 2019. Like, how can you trust any of them? Even current ones, why would we trust anything? Hey, reset your routers, because China might have access to them. I'm not worried about China having access to my shit.
I'm worried about you.
You. Yeah, our local. Our law enforcement. And like, how many times have you seen people set up? Like, I say this all the time, and every night I'll have a guy who's a cop on. I go, yeah, but you know that I'm right, because you know that I'm right, because you've seen it happen. You have had cops on your force who have been kicked off the force. There's even law enforcement in prison for setting people up. Like, the whole ID thing, right? I watch all those videos, the First Amendment lawyers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I play that out in my head. Anytime I get stopped, I turn my lights on, I put my hands up, and I roll my windows down. They're like, what are you doing? I go, I just don't want you to shoot me.
Yeah.
And they laugh, and we laugh, and that's kind of the end of it. But I mean, there's so many situations. I just watched an instance where there was a husband and a wife. I think they were like 22, 25, sleeping in their car at an area where people pull up and sleep in their cars in Florida. And this dude calls, and he's like, hey, I've seen this car pull up here 4 or 5 times. They sleep. They pull up here about midnight, and then at 7 in the morning, they leave. They're just sleeping. Can you go and just do a welfare check? What he's asking them is, will you rouse them out? I don't like the fact that they're sleeping on the other side of the fence. And the cops come up, and it turns up into this whole thing. And they're like, well, so-and-so, somebody called and wanted a welfare check. Well, as you see, we're fine. We're sleeping in our car. I have my cat here. We're just saving some money. Our parents own homes in the area. We go to homesteads. We help take the homestead to the next level. We're saving up to buy our own piece of property.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, well, we just need your license. She's like, you don't need my license.
Yeah.
You don't. And it turns into this whole thing of them arresting and this huge, it just unravels from there. But it's just you're going to do what I told you to do. Like, there was no crime. There was no reason to check. You're on my, like, I've seen it happen. Like, you're on my property. You know who the fuck I am. Like, you came here.
Yeah. But in that situation, the one in the car, I know people want to, like, stand up to the man or whatever. isn't in that situation the easiest thing to do just to give the officer your driver's license? You are in your vehicle. You are on the side of a road.
Yes.
That legal discourse could go either direction depending on the judge you get. Like, I can see the cop, like, okay, you guys are hanging out here. We had a complaint. We need to at least be like, when we tell that person there's nothing we can do about it, like, we ran their ID. They don't have warrants. They're not criminals. They're not doing anything wrong. And don't bother us anymore. Because, I mean, our local PD is really very invasive if you get down into Lake Worth. But where I live, it's the sheriffs. And the sheriffs, like, that's how they handle shit. Like, they will make sure that there's not a problem. And then they will go tell that Karen, if you call us again about this, we are going to come cite you because you now know what you're doing. And they can't do that if they can't establish that what's going on is really completely legal under law and under the situation.
Yeah, it's just the pushback. I mean, that's could I go, no, I'm not giving you my license. Sure, I could. And yeah. I know they're going to impound my shit.
Yeah.
They're going to take me to jail. Am I right? Sure. Could we win a lawsuit? I'm sure we could. I don't have
time for
that.
Is it worth it?
No, for most people, it's not. For the people sleeping in their car, perhaps it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that fight. Choose your fights, right?
Well, they're trying to save up to get onto a piece of land, and there goes hundreds of dollars
in a lawsuit.
Yeah, they said they arrested him for resisting arrest and hindering an investigation or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
And what they'll do is they'll drop that. They'll give him some sort of misdemeanor bullshit and let him plead guilty to it. And they'll call that a good caller because they got something out of it.
Yeah. And the crazy shit is he'll be on probation for 3 years and then have to. He will have no Fourth Amendment at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's another example of these people that insist on lecturing police. I think in most, not all, but in most instances, is a big mistake. Like, if you want to make a legal precedential case, like in, you know, Wilson versus Thomas, 1978, it was cops don't give a fuck about that. They're not paid to give a fuck about that. That is not their world. That's something you do in a courtroom, not on the side of the road. And I get the irritation. I get the whole, I'm not going to do what you tell me to do type of mindset. And I think in some places you're in good standing when you say, I'm drawing a line here, but you should really think about that before you do it. Like, I've seen people with the, where they do the drunk stops or they check if you're drunk.
Yeah.
They basically just take their ID and hold it up to the wall, to the window with a note. They said, this is all you can do. And they end up getting, like, they'll be like, and then eventually they just wave them through because they know they're right. If you're going to pull some shit, you better know you're right. And it would be great if other people have done it successfully before you are the test monkey.
Well, and how close are you to shift change, right? They don't want to have to write the report when they bust that window out and OC you.
Yeah.
Like, but you get the wrong dude on the wrong night and he will whip your ass. Like you might, who's right or wrong, but did you get your fucking teeth knocked out?
Yeah.
Good question.
And I mean, that's the other thing. Never forget they have qualified immunity. They're not afraid that if the individual cop that causes a problem, when you successfully sue that department, in most instances, it costs them nothing.
No, it doesn't. They have no, the insurance pays for it.
They don't get reprimanded. They don't get demoted. They don't get their promotion held up. They don't get anything. Their people look after them, their police union, their union rep, their chief. They don't want any trouble. And the insurance company, like you said, for the department, not for the officer, makes a settlement with the person doing the suing. And it almost never goes to court. Because when you sue a government entity, they're going to bleed you hard and make it very difficult for you because they have many more resources than you do. So you really need to think, like, what am I – this is the big question I try to get people to ask in all walks of life. From a business plan to shit like this, what does winning look like? Like, in the best case scenario, this goes exactly the way you think it is. Is it worth it? And most people, it's sad. They don't take the time to think that way.
And I tell my youngsters, I tell my kids all growing up, I go, you know, you might be right, 100% right, but you have to ask yourself, what do you stand to gain versus what do you stand to lose? And the example I use, even my wife driving my big ass truck with $4,000 worth of tires on it, right?
Yeah.
She'll be at Walmart or at a mall or something and just lay on that horn when that dude cuts her off. And I'm like, Amanda, he's going to slice those tires out. You're never going to know who he was. It's $4,000, right? And then the other thing, right? You're at the mall and you're waiting. You got your signal on. Somebody rips in your parking spot and you get out. You have no idea what frame of mind that person is, right? He shoots you or does something that cripples you. You're in a wheelchair the rest of your life. Sure, he goes to jail, but you were in a wheelchair over something when we could have just went and got another parking spot. And that's the thing, right? What do you stand to gain? Okay. But you stand to lose oftentimes a lot more by that.
Well, yeah. And sometimes it's just you would have given that spot to the person if you knew what was going on for them in the background too, right? Like when I learned this lesson the hard way in college, somebody took my spot. And I flipped him off and, you know, honked. And he walks up to me, a guy with two canes and non-functioning legs, and says, "I'm so sorry, I didn't see that you were waiting for that spot." And I'm like, I literally would have given you that spot if I knew you couldn't walk, right? So I'm also careful just from a moral standpoint of, and he may have seen it, you know, who knows, but from a moral standpoint, they may have just gotten, their wife may have just dumped them and told them she was cheating on them that day and they're in a bad state of mind that way, or their kid might be in the hospital getting a heart transplant. Like, you just don't know.
I remember this book I read, and I don't remember the author, but he said something about, he was like on a train in New York City, like a subway. And these three kids are just running around like freaking terroristic monkeys, jumping on shit, climbing on shit. And their dad's just sitting there with his head down, ignoring it. And so he finally says something to the guy right about the time they're going to get off the train. And he said, he looks up like he never even noticed. He said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. We just came from the hospital. Their mother just passed away and I don't know what to do about it." Now, do you not feel this freaking big when you're the person that did that? So it could be that tragedy. But it could also be like what John was saying, the tragedy that puts them on the edge. You don't know that maybe that guy got served with divorce papers that day, right? Found out his wife is cheating, but she's got it all covered up. It's 99% he's going to lose custody of his kids and half his shit. And he's on the freaking edge. And then you're behind him laying on the horn and giving him the finger. You know, I saw a video a few years ago. It was a couple in Pennsylvania. They were screaming and yelling at the neighbor. The neighbor went in and got a pistol and shot both of them. They're laying on the ground, but not dead. He's so pissed off, he goes back in and gets a rifle and kills both of them while they're laying on the ground. And this woman is screaming, "You motherfucker, you shot me, you piece of shit." Like, she's still verbally attacking this guy while she's bleeding out on the ground. So, I mean, we had three non-mentally stable people, but we could all hit a breaking point. And you need to realize in those situations, and it doesn't matter that the guy has a badge. It doesn't matter that he's an inspector for the state. Everybody has those shitty days that put you close to the edge. And you should think about that because you don't know what you're dealing with.
Look how many SWAT call outs where at the end the neighbors are like, "He's never done anything like this. This is totally not him." Like, don't be there when that shit happens if you can avoid it.
Yeah. It's like when you're going to your favorite grocery store and there are 9 cops outside with their lights on, go to a different grocery store. That's something I think a lot of people do wrong because they're used to just feeling safe and walking in, right?
Yeah.
Could be an armed robbery going on at your favorite grocery store that day.
Yeah. And you just don't know what's going to do it. Just down the road from me, about 2 weeks before I came up to see you, Nicole, I went down the corner store to get some gas and some stuff from the corner store. And the whole corner store is roped off. There's like 5 sheriff's deputies inside, lights on. And there's one car completely plowed into another car. But it's at the gas pump. And this is not a very big parking lot where you could really get up to speed. And the guy, and the reason there was so much investigation is the guy in the car wasn't dead, but he was so severely injured. There was a high probability of him dying. They had a helicopter come care flight his ass to the hospital. And so they were conducting it as a potential homicide at the investigation. But what had happened is one guy pissed the other guy off and he pulled in to get gas. And while he was getting out of the car, the other guy came at full speed and ripped into the parking lot and slammed the back end of his car. And so he's halfway out of the car when that happens. And the car that did the impact ends up like halfway in, like into the car that got hit. And what broke my heart is the one that did the hitting was like a 68 Camaro. That hurt me more than the injured party. But you get my point. Like, all this was some sort of road rage, and that's how it went terminal.
Scott, nobody disagrees with you. It is unsafe. And if you can't take honking, being honked at, you shouldn't be driving. what we are saying, what I am saying is, you honk at the wrong dude, benign, you mean nothing by it. There are plenty of dudes out there that will fucking shoot you over it. So be right, don't be right. I hope it never happens to you either way, man. I hope it never comes to that.
Yeah.
But there are plenty of people who are crippled or dead because of honking or some silly shit in the parking lot. So you tell your kids and educate them. However, all my kids carry guns. All my kids are well-trained. They also know de-escalation and avoidance.
Yeah. It's even geographical to a degree. Like in Pennsylvania, like especially like near Philly and shit, like two guys are walking in a mall. One guy accidentally bumps into the other guy. It may not escalate to a fight, but it always almost does. Like, what's up? Why'd you do that? Oh, it was a mistake. Oh, fuck you. Like, it goes like that. Like, you're down here in Fort Worth and two people do that. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, it's a meet. Like, the entire culture's different. You don't know where that person's from. If you're traveling, you don't know what the local – you have no idea how many wild cards are sitting in that moment where for your own ego – and women are bad about it. Men are worse. For your own ego, you had to go at a different level – and it served no purpose. Because, again, what does winning look like? What does winning look like when you flip the guy off, he flips you back off, and you both leave? Do you now feel better? Is your life better? Are you going to be more productive that day? Are you going to spend the rest of the day chewing on him? He did that. Like, and he's going to do that with you. Where if he does that shit and you're just like, hey, no problem, and you leave, you let it go almost instantly, it's going to burn like coals on his head for the rest of the day because you were nice when he was an asshole. And by the way, get a freaking dash cam.
Dash cams are awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And not expensive.
Look how many women get their men killed. That dude. Just out in the parking lot, right?
Yeah. He'll kick your ass. Like,
yeah, that dude would never have been in that situation if it was just him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it goes the other way, but it's mostly men that get killed over the woman. It doesn't usually go the opposite direction.
Most of the time, yeah. And there's like, there seems to be a lot more women that are acting this way in public lately. Maybe it's just social media. But I have a theory. It's because when a guy acts like that in public, somebody pops him in the mouth. I think that's a big deterrent. Like, not necessarily the road rage or anything, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, the people showing their ass at a bar or at a restaurant or something and running their mouth and start lipping everybody off and all. If a guy does that, there's usually four or five dudes going, bro, you need to simmer. Right? They don't even know. They're not part of it. And they're just like, you need to settle the hell down or you're going to get popped. And women tend, like, I was brought up, you don't put your hands on a woman. And I still believe that, unless somebody's trying to kill me or something. I agree with that. But you can see some of the fallout with it, you know.
Yep. You guys ready for a new topic?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I do. I have one thing on foster care. There is a private foster care organization in Tennessee and probably in many states that is faith-based. And you can put your, if you're going to jail, you can put your kid in it.
Oh, wow.
And they take them to, you know, whatever church you want them to. And they allow visitation.
Hmm.
So that's, and the family does not get paid for taking your child. So I just say that in case anybody needs it. Like, there's an alternative to the state foster system that can be used if you are in a situation where there's no family to take your kid for whatever reason. So
my co-host on the podcast has two older brothers and sisters, and they said that mom used to drop them at an orphanage when she needed time of her own. And Jeff said, we were talking about on a podcast just a couple weeks ago, blew my mind. I'd never even heard of it.
Like it's daycare or something.
Yeah. And he did. She would drop them off and they'd be at the foster home or at the orphanage for a couple of months. And then she would just show back up when, you know, she had her stuff worked out or had a, you know, new job or a new man that she was living with or whatever.
Yep. That's the thing. Okay. So what is one of the fastest ways that you see when somebody has a business idea that proves to you that their business idea is not going to work? What are, you know, some of the things that you see, you're like, yeah, that's never going to happen.
Well, it's usually them. It's just the execution, right? A person with 100 ideas and zero execution, you can make almost anything work for a little while. And a lot of it's just not profitable, right? A lot of people will start. I've seen a lot of this in the last couple of years. People will start this eggs, right? That's a good example because I do that stupid shit. I got eggs, $4 a dozen. $4 a dozen doesn't cover to pay them. It definitely, that's zero account for my time. And people are selling them for $2 a dozen, right? So it's not even worth the effort to do it. We produce so many eggs. My employees take eggs home. And I noticed that if I put them in cartons, the employees take the eggs home. But if the employees have to put them in cartons, the employees don't take the eggs home. It's cheaper for me. I maintain that flock of chickens so that we have them if we ever need them and I can produce more chickens. Same with the rabbits. But it's cost wise, it is cheaper for me to throw the eggs away or feed them back to the dogs. We produce so many eggs and people are like, well, why don't you give them to the homeless? Because then I have fucking homeless people at my property knowing all the stuff around my property.
Yeah, we took a bunch of duck eggs to church where they handed them out, so we didn't have that problem.
Yep.
And the poor people didn't want duck's eggs because they were duck's eggs.
Yep, and they don't want
all those. That, right? Yeah, yeah. Yep. All right, we'll go back to selling them at the nail salon then.
Yeah. So a lot of people will start a business, but where they don't, you know, if you're a stay-at-home mom, for instance, or stay-at-home dad, either way, and you have no overhead and your time is idle anyways, so you can produce some craft or hobby and then sell it. But if you actually had to pay yourself and pay rent and pay electricity and, you know, then it doesn't work. But most of it's lack of execution.
When somebody tells me I'm not good at sales, that's usually a sign that they're not going to put the time in to sell their stuff. And if they don't sell their stuff, their business is going to fail. That's the biggest thing I hear is I'm not good at sales.
I saw a short or a reel or something yesterday. And this girl's like, every entrepreneur coming to the realization that they have to be a content creator. And she's got sad face. And then when the camera goes on, she's like, and then she starts selling stuff. You have to sell your shit. You're the lead singer of your band. You are the poster boy. Unless you have a product, then you know, the product will speak for itself, hopefully. But if I'm at a, you see a lot of, I just call it arts and crafts and, you know, hobby stuff. But if you're at a flea market and you've got we saw it at the reptile shows, right? Dude's making 3D print stuff for snakes. And this guy down here has them for $5. And this guy over here has them for $20. And he's selling the shit out of them. And the $5 guy's not, because it's how he presents himself. If you're sitting there and your customer comes up and you don't acknowledge your customer, they'll go pay four times more for it from the person who's personable.
Yep. How about you, Jack?
As to what?
What's something you see that happens with ideas for a business that makes you instantly know it's going to fail when you talk to people about their idea?
I thought that's what you were going to say. I'm going to try not to go off on a full Jack rant here.
I think
the first word is idea. Idea guy. Like, literally, I have this idea. Okay, I don't even give a fuck. I'm sorry. Like, go do something. Unless you, like, if you have a prototype or, like, you have something halfway built and you're asking for advice on how to execute the final part of that idea, okay. But in general, when people approach me about businesses, it's almost inevitably they want my advice, they want my help, they want my kind of bump, but they have done absolutely nothing, and they're coming from a standpoint of an idea. And I think that is mostly just intellectual masturbation, and it's not ever going to go anywhere. I remember I had John Dowie at one of the workshops do like a four-part presentation, which I never do at my workshops, like, because there's only so many spots and I try to give them away. He went through everything on the microgreens business, not just how to grow it, how to harvest it, how to package it, how to sell it, how to find customers, how to prospect, like all of it. And I bet a dozen people came up while I was talking to him after his last part of that presentation and said, I'm going to go do that. And they'd walk away and he'd go, no, they're not. Like, because it was so much just in the idea phase, it was already like they were so confident that they were going to do it. That was actually an indicator they weren't going to do it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I need to make more money. Well, work more. Well, I don't want to work more. Well, I don't know what to do.
You can owe more money.
Charge more. Then you don't want more money.
Yeah. Or find another source of income. Create another avenue of revenue. If you want to automate it and drop ship something, do that. maybe you don't have to work more all the time, but you have to work more to set it up and to figure it out. And like the first thing you do like that isn't going to work. You're not going to make any money. You're going to basically pay tuition to Life University.
I asked AI if I put $5 every day into Bitcoin in the beginning of 2019, how much money would I have right now? And it said that today I would have $630,000 at $5 a day. They say that if you spend, I think it's $25, it's 24 and change or something, you spend $24 a day, by the end of the year, you've blown $10,000. And when people tell me all the time they want to start this thing or I want to get a sewing machine, and I'm like, well, you can get a $1,000 sewing machine or you can get a $2,000 sewing machine. And they're like, well, I don't have the money. I'm like, but you vape, you drink, you everybody has some place the money goes. And if you just didn't do that thing, right? If you really want this thing, then you eat bologna sandwiches for, 90 days. Whatever it is, you just have to make sacrifices.
So have either of you ever seen a business succeed where you were asked to sign an NDA before they would even tell you what the business was?
I know they're there, but I won't personally sign an NDA because it has to do with something I've already done typically. Like having done what I do for 35 years, when a dude's like NDA, I'm like, I'm not signing your NDA. And then they tell you anyways. And then we go find one of these 20 big kit bags and I pull the thing out. Yeah. I've got this idea and nobody makes it. Well, that's because nobody wants it, because if everybody wanted it or anybody wanted it, somebody would be making it. And that's not always the case, but like all I have to do is deviate around your trademark or your patent by 10%. And that could be 10% better or 10% leaner manufacture, whatever it is. All I have to do is change it a little bit. Like your NDA does nothing.
Most NDAs aren't worth the paper they're written on because they're written about ideas and you literally can't NDA an idea. I have signed NDAs in consulting agreements, but I've never signed an NDA with a potential company. I've signed an NDA that was specific to the area the NDA applied to for existing technology or proprietary methods that the company already had in place that they would need to reveal to me so that I could consult for them. That I will do. An NDA for an idea, that's my excuse to not talk to you.
My default
Where's your business plan? No business plan? Not talking to you. I don't even need a business plan. Just I don't want to talk to you because I don't think you're going to do anything. So if you haven't gone that far, that's a filter. You want an NDA? I don't sign those. Go F off. That's just a time saving thing for me.
Yeah, you don't need me if like the NDA thing, like you don't need me anyways. I'm not going to be part of whatever it is you're doing. I was standing at Self-Reliance Festival and Evan came up and he's like, and that's the other thing, right? If they're at, hey, can I ask you a question? No, you can't fucking ask me a question. If you're asking permission, you're not going to go anywhere ever for the most part. And that's not what Evan did. Evan was telling me about how he's going to start this. Evan had stood there while we were doing sales. I bring somebody in to do sales because I'll always give you a discount. I don't even know your ass and I'll give you a discount. So I bring in my buddy Justin to handle sales because Justin won't give you a discount. So Evan had stood there while everybody was doing sales and people kept picking up my personal bin. I have a box full of radios and they're like, how much for these? And Evan's like, those aren't for sale. Those are John's radios. Only the nylon stuff is for sale. So he's like, I think I'm going to buy radios and program them to people's and build packages. And I go, that's an awesome idea, man. You should totally do that. You probably won't do that. And he's like, I made him so mad by saying he wouldn't do it. He did it to prove me wrong. And that's kind of, and there's a lot more to it, but that's
you Marine recruited him.
Yeah.
You Marine recruited him. The Army's like, here's money. If you join, we'll give you a bonus. Marine's like, you can't be a Marine. You're too much of a pussy. And then the other, I can be a Marine. And next thing you know, he signed up as a Marine.
Yeah. And I like, there's only out of the hundreds of people that have given me these ideas that I'm like, you won't do it. There's only three that have ever done it. And Evan's one of them. And I don't remember who the other two are.
Yep. RadioMadeEasy.com. Case you haven't connected with Evan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that people are going to whether you help them or not.
They already
and
are.
What I've learned in guarding my own reputation is come to me when you've done something. Like, don't come to me because I've literally like set people up for success from zero. And that's never, not one time worked. And I would be so much better off if I said, go get something. go get a customer base. I don't care if it's 20 people. Prove you have a business model. Come back to me. Then we can look at maybe doing something more for you. But what people want is someone to hold their, like, I think it's like, I want to be in business, but I want to be treated like an employee. And those two worlds cannot go together. They can't.
Yeah, where's Bang Bang at right now? Bang Bang said, I'm going to buy a truck and a trailer, and I'm going to do hot shot deliveries.
Okay.
And if you need anything booked. And that dude has been doing that for about 3 years straight now. And he's constantly like, I'm in Florida, I'm in Ohio, I'm in since like all over the place.
He's doing long distance.
Yeah, and, wow. And as a hotshot, right? So he doesn't have to have all the basically he bought a big ass Dodge truck or a Ford truck,
okay,
without the bed, and just hauls loads for people, right? So if I want to move a helicopter fuselage from Atlanta to here, he will go and pick that up and bring that CH-46 and set it here on the property. If I want a caboose, he will load any loads that you need moved. He will move that for you. That's one of those dudes. He's like, I'm going to do this thing. And then boom, all of a sudden he's just doing it.
But I mean, the hotshot thing, is that like a platform like Uber for this shit, or is it just like,
no, it's basically you're a truck driver, but you own your own truck. You don't use a semi truck.
Yeah. So it's expensive, but it's less expensive than putting it on a conventional.
It is
OTR semi. So, okay, this is the idea thing. Like, I don't have time for this, but somebody that's listening there right now, you know, you could build the Uber or Lyft version of that. You could build that with coding. You could be halfway there by the end of next week. Now, there's a lot of other legal regulatory things to deal with, but if somebody wants something, there's an opportunity, because there would probably be more people doing that if there was more ways to gain customers for it.
So something you may not know about me, Jack, is I used to be a truck broker.
Did not know that.
I used to be a truck broker.
Totally, I can see
teacher
that.
Teacher associate truck broker in the past of Nicole Foss.
So there was a system when I was a truck broker called In Transit where it did that. It matched loads with trucks. And you like the kind of truck, the kind of load. And it was so that when a truck got somewhere empty, you could fill them up to get back to where they had to go for their next official load.
What was your CB handle?
I didn't have one.
They had one for you.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Moving potatoes out of Idaho and Christmas trees out of Oregon.
There's only probably one person that will even get that directly.
Yes.
Nicole Sparkles.
Nicole Sparkles.
You have to be a fan of How I Met Your Mother to even have a chance at understanding that one. With the Robin Sparkles backstory.
So Scott says apps already exist for hot shots, several of them.
Yeah, they had TV shows for that where they would do that.
Then if the platform exists and you can't build a better one, you could get a truck and use the platform to do the same thing if you're really broke and saying you want more in your life. And then I would look at that business and go, that will be a business that you can make a lot of money on in reality and make very little money with on paper because of things like all the expenses, including mileage that you can deduct, and how generous that is and how impossible it is for the government to say it's not mileage applying to the building when literally driving is your job, right? Or to the business, because driving is your job. So there's your opportunity. There's a platform. You need a truck. You need to be able to move shit, and you need to market yourself.
Speak of the devil. There's Radio Made Easy.
He said Radio Made Easy 3 times, and look what happened.
His ears started burning, and he just got drawn in.
It's an internet phenomenon. You just say it 3 times, and he shows up in your life.
He got sucked in like a comet into Jupiter, man.
Plus, if you have a big trailer, I have a 35 deck over sitting right here.
Yeah.
And I've got a Dodge diesel sitting right here. I could go drive tomorrow. I'm sure there's some kind of placards I would need and stuff, but I don't have to be able to drive a semi truck, right? I'm driving an automatic transmission. I know that the 5-speed is, you know, more preferred or whatever, but I could, if I got into a time where I needed to go and make money, I could go do that. I could also take that skid steer and put it there and go do jobs doing that. Like there's work everywhere. You can all these people mowing lawns. If you're a kid with a lawnmower and you show up, somebody will pay you to mow grass.
That's especially this time of year. In Nashville, you can definitely be hired to cut out iced tree stuff, debris still. I was just there yesterday. It's everywhere. So it's amazing. Okay, so how did you get your first five customers with what you're doing now?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, gun shows. No, I think even before gun shows, I was walking into gun shops and be like, I made this thing. And some dude's like, how much is it? I'll buy that thing. And then, you know, it was all word of mouth back then. We didn't have the internet. Things are so much faster. Like, we used to have to have somebody mail me a check and then I'd deposit it in the bank and then the bank wouldn't cash it because I never had any money to, you know, cover any of it. But then going to gun shows, you just sell yourself. I just had a really good spiel on my product and we would take knives and cut legs off of tables and shit. People were like, what are those knives? We weren't even selling the knives. They were just my knives. And we would, you know, we did so much damage at the Crossroads of the West gun show, they added 2 pages of rules to it.
That's hilarious. Jack, how about you? How'd you get your first five customers?
That's kind of convoluted given the way a podcast works. Yep. In the first 6 months, I didn't have any paying customers. I had listeners, which I gained primarily through exposure through like Apple iTunes. And using SEO and some paid advertising, like there was a thing called StumbleUpon back then. My first customers, I guess, were actually sponsors before I had the membership program. So that simply happened by putting out consistent content to where people that were in adjacent industry started reaching out to me and asking me if they could do something with us. And I simply put a price on it and said, you can be a sponsor for this much money. Give me a banner and give me a blurb and we're off to the races. And they did. And then that spooned into the entire primary revenue model, which is my membership program, which when I started having more people asking to sponsor the show than I had sponsorship space, because you can only take so many sponsors before you dilute it. I kind of put that whole membership, like, would you be interested in giving my best customers a discount if I build this program of members program? And then I immediately went to all the sponsors and said, do you guys want to participate in this? I signed up about 15 people initially to do discounts for the members. And then I launched that program and I went from zero end user customers to like 1,000 in 30 days on a recurrent membership. And at that point I had enough, basically at that point I had a base salary and that was 8 months into it. So it took 8 months of ground building work to flip that switch.
That's what the fish store guy, business wise, I think that was the best episode that has, I quoted today. Yeah. He's like, I had a YouTube channel showing fish every night as I'd leave the fish store. I shut it down, came back a year later, had 1,000 followers. How do I get a dollar from every one of them? And then how do I add enough value to get $5? Right now I got $5,000 a month. How do I do that times four? How do I 10x that, right? And that's the thing that always stuck. Can I get a dollar from 1,000 people? And what can I add to bump that up to $5 or $10?
Yep.
That makes it sound doable, you know?
Yep. It's the 1,000 True Fans model, just you're engineering it a little bit differently. The base of the 1,000 True Fans model, this was originally designed for independent musicians. Like, I want to make money playing music. Okay, you need 1,000 True Fans. And a true fan was defined as a person that will spend one day's salary on you per year. So if they make, you know, I worked it out with the average median salary in the United States. And if you did that, you had a gross revenue of about $170,000 a year is how that worked out. And it is that simple, but that doesn't make it easy. Yeah. Like, the mechanics are very, very simple. Like, to get 1,000 true fans, you probably need around 10,000 followers. You have a 10% hit rate of people that really identify with you. And then you have to build a product that they'll buy. And then if that's all you're going to have, which I don't recommend, you need to make sure you have sufficient margin in the product that you actually can keep enough of that 180 grand a year to actually pay your bills. Because if you're making 90, you're only making like a 50% bump on that. And then by the time you pay all your matching shit and all, you'll probably make more working overtime at Walmart than you will in your own business. You have to push for that upper tier. But if you look at it as a base salary, which is how I looked at it when I established it, like once I have this, I have enough money that I can at least pay my bills and I can survive. And that means that everything I build from here is gravy. It goes into my retirement. It buys me vacations. It makes me happy. I get to roll around in it like Scrooge McDuck. Whatever I want to do with it. It is all mine because the base level is now covered.
Think about when people are starting a side hustle, hobby, business, whatever, right? Most of those people work an 8-hour day and then they put in 2-3 hours on their own. When you can get that thing to the point where you can quit that 8 hours, now you can put that time plus the additional. The key is to do that 8 plus the other 8, not just the 8. Like if you want to grow that, like your entire life for the first 5 years of that business is that business. If you pour everything into there, that's the difference between you trying to make $100,000 a year and making millions a year. It's that 5 years and all that, everything goes back into that thing.
I think there's a mixed bag there too. Like it is good in some ways that the person starts out with this small dollar figure in mind because they believe they can do it. So they take an action. I think people hold on to that low number or that unreasonably low level of existence. Like, oh, I can make $100,000 a year, but I can't make $1 million a year. Well, why not? You built a system to make $100,000 a year. Why can't you improve the system to make $1 million a year? And again, that doesn't mean it's all profit. And even if you never get there, oh, darn, you only got the $500,000 a year and you only make $300,000 in profit out of that. Oh, that's a horrible thing. Like it's the whole thing with, if you want, you got a runner in high school that's running the hurdles and they're tipping every fifth hurdle over and losing points, but they can do it. And so you raise the hurdle 6 inches and you have them run that for like 2 or 3 weeks and they're hitting every other one. But when you put them back down to the height at the regulation race, they soar over them like they're not there. And so if we don't push ourselves to do more than we think we can, we'll do less than we expect. Not, we won't meet our expectations. We'll fail our own expectations.
Right. If you try to make $1 million in a 12-month period, you're never going to do it. You got to shoot for 3 million. And then what you're going to find is that you'll be at 1.5 or 2.
Yeah.
You always, you always have to set the goal higher. You set the standard higher. If you train in the worst, you never operate in the worst. It's always a little bit better than that.
And some people can't fathom the big goal. Like,
well, they don't. They just don't want.
And then that means that's not for them.
A lot of people want to play business, right? They want to have business cards and have a you know, social media footprint and everything, but they don't actually have a product. It's entertain, educate, equip. And most of them, there's never a call to action in most of it. They put up content all the time, but there's no, hey, I'll send you this thing if you DM me or comment, you know, whatever, and then it can auto DM everybody, or let me have your email or buy this thing. There's just content, no call to action.
Yeah, and you know, in sales, people make the joke about ABCs, always be selling, spelling selling with a C. Mm-hmm. But that's not what it is. It's always be closing.
Yep.
So it's a funny thing, but when you ask people for money, John, I don't know if you know this, sometimes they give it to you.
Give it to you.
Right? But if you don't ask for it and you're like, I have this stuff over here, but let's talk about this over here, and you never actually ask for the order, they don't give it to you. It's crazy. It's almost like when you request something, it triggers something in the other party. They have to make a decision. Either I'm going to spend money with John or I'm not. They may not always choose to spend money, but they become infinitely more likely to spend money with you if you ask for the order. And when I was like a young VP of sales, like the hardest thing that I would have to teach these people whose entire livelihood was depending on getting an order, freaking ask for it. Right. And if you're not to the point where you know you can't get it yet, what is the next step? Like, because some of this was very involved, high technical sales. What is the next step to move the process forward? Because that's all part of the closing process. If you're just doing a side hustle with your little website and all, your website should ask for the freaking money. John, have you ever been on a site? You're like, I want this thing. You can't figure out how to buy it.
All the time.
Right? You're sitting there with like your wallet, like shoving. Nicole saw me do this.
I did.
Trying to buy a computer from Best Buy.
Yeah.
You think this would be easy? She's like, I should have videoed.
I wish I would have videoed that.
I had my wallet. Oh, I just walked the deal. And it was like coming up to a workshop. My old computer died. I needed it. It had to happen. It didn't matter what it cost. I knew I could pick it up the next day at Best Buy. I was going to buy it. And this is a big company. What was that, 5 years ago? It's not like it was 2002. And I finally did it, but it was not easy.
It was three years ago.
3 years ago. Okay.
It was not that long ago.
Yeah. Like, you should be able to buy a computer online from Best Buy. Like,
Nope. You cannot.
Nope. Well, I didn't want the one that said buy now. I wanted a different one, and that just...
the problem was you wanted a computer with more balls than they were offering.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had it.
Yeah, they had it.
but they did not make it easy to get to it. And I think so many people are like that. And by the way, there's somebody out there right now, maybe even listening, that asked me for mentorship very recently, and I gave it to you, and you did some things. And I said, if you do the things, let me know how to help you do those things, and I haven't heard anything. And you know who you are.
I know who it is, too.
Yep.
They fizzle out. They're hot and heavy with it for a minute. It's like an addict deciding they want to become clean. They're so far down that they're going to – tomorrow's the day they're going to change over, and they go look for a job, and they maybe even get a job, and they're clean for a few days. But then they realize, oh, shit, this is some work also, and they just don't do anything with it.
On this one, you know this person. I don't want to say their name or anything.
No idea who we're talking about.
They're very motivated, and I don't understand. I'm wondering almost if they got a little bit afraid of potential, like what would happen if it all cave in at once. Like, I'm not ready yet. But then reach out and tell me that. I'll help you.
Yeah, because that doesn't usually happen that way.
Yeah.
And when it does, it's a good thing.
Because I don't know.
I would love to not be able to keep up with the orders.
I don't know what your website is where you sell the things that I said I would tell people about. So I can't tell them about the thing that you sell because I don't know how to find it.
Yeah, the dopamine hit, that's a good one. It's like they're jacked up on some pre-workout for a little while.
Yeah.
Yep. I got my first 5 customers because they came to my house and drank coffee. So I knew every single one of them. The second 5 at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
The third 5 was 50. And that was because I did a podcast consistently for a year and started saying, if you want to support the show, buy your coffee at Hollow Roast. That was it.
What drives me nuts, Nicole, for you is that you'll go and you'll provide coffee at an event and people will pay $5 a cup for it. And then you'll say, here's a pound of the coffee you paid $5 a cup for 18 bucks or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know, that seems expensive.
They're not my customer.
No, they're not. But it's just like, that is like maddening that, but do you know what you're paying per bag when you buy it for $5 a cup?
A lot.
I've never figured it out, but I'm going to go somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 a pound.
It's, yeah. Yep.
I mean, I really have no idea. I've never done the math, but that would be interesting. That would be actually really interesting. When you buy Starbucks coffee, even if it's not Nicole's, right? It's just Starbucks or any cafes. When you buy their coffee and you figure out how much coffee goes into making that whatever coffee drink you drink is, and you paid $5 for it, let's say, what are you paying per pound of coffee? And then you're going to turn around and tell me, John and Nicole, you don't have enough money to start a business.
Now I'm going to do math.
Nicole's going to do it. We've got her a math assignment.
Yeah, I was like, geez.
What do you think, John?
Even if you don't like coffee, Nicole has a subscription. Like, you could buy that right now for somebody for Christmas.
Yeah.
She'll send shit to you every single month. You'll get a nice little package.
Yeah.
And every month, those people will think about you. Even if you don't drink coffee, you could send it to yourself. You could send it to your wife. You could send anyone. You could send that to. And it's a great little subscription service.
I used to do it with wine to some of my big clients back when I had clients, right? Because when those 2 bottles of wine showed up every month, right? Now, was that an expense for me? Sure, but it was deductible, fully deductible. But, you know, if like you're putting $50 into a client that's spending $500,000 a year with you, you don't even think about that. But what that meant is when they got the obligatory birthday card, Christmas card, whatever, from one of my competitors who was also trying to farm more business from them, that meant one thing because they all came together. But every month when those 2 bottles of Malbec or whatever showed up, oh, that was Jack. Jack sent me that. And that is the way to think. Like when I used to do travel to sales territory, everybody played golf. You get the Gray Bar VP out on the golf course. You get them alone for 2 hours. I hate golf. I'm terrible at golf. You know what I'm good at? Shooting. So I found all the skeet ranges that were near places in my territory where influencers were, and I took them skeet shooting. Well, I don't have a gun. That's all right. They'll provide one.
Yeah.
And some of them were like, I get to shoot it. They'll really let me shoot a gun. Oh, yeah, they'll let you shoot a gun. Because, you know, I was in places like New Jersey and whatever where, like, you carry a gun the wrong way, you're going to prison for 10 years.
Or even by accident for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's in your trunk, and it's not, you know, whatever. You weren't going directly home from the range. You could get popped by the wrong cop. And so the fact that they could go shoot a gun to them was, like, really a big deal. And so it was a differentiator. But that meant when I came into town, like, we were either going to go fishing or we're going to go to the skeet range or something like that. And so that made me, hey, I'm going to be in town next week. Can I come by? Yes. Like, instantly, you would instantly get a yes. where if you want to offer them to play golf, like the guys I'm talking about, they're getting 5-6 invitations to play golf a week.
Right.
And they do have a job to do. They can't play golf every day.
Ultra Reef, who are you and what company were you with and what are you doing nowadays, man?
$300, Jack.
$300? A pound is what you're paying for coffee.
At a Starbucks. Pound makes $300 of cups of coffee?
Yeah.
At $5 a cup. $3 to $3.20.
Mm-hmm. And that's the cold coffee. That's a lot of coffee per cup. Some of y'all that are drinking lighter brews, you know, maybe it's 400.
Some of you wimps.
Yeah. Nicole puts like a lot of coffee into a half a cup of coffee. She calls a cup of coffee.
I do. I like
my coffee doesn't go in teacups. My coffee goes in coffee mugs.
Oh, Mike Snowdy. No shit. Right on. I like that dude.
Yeah. I think it's important to know the difference in clientele for that, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's willing to buy a cup of coffee for $5 faster than they're willing to buy a pound of coffee for $25.
Yep.
Which they can then make awesome coffee at home, get more value, better experience. My customers who buy $25 to $35 a pound coffee don't even blink about it. Like they're exactly who should be buying my coffee.
And it's instant gratification. $5 to buy a coffee at a shop. Mm-hmm. They'll do both.
It's the instant gratification thing too. You know, depending on the weather and everything. Like I'll go buy. I typically won't buy coffee unless they have a cookie or a cake or something to eat with it. When we're at like the flea market in Nashville, the antique venue or something, I'll always buy a cup of coffee just because I don't know why. I don't even know if I like coffee anymore, but I constantly have coffee, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there's a coffee shop. Let's go get coffee.
Yeah.
My cup's empty. I'm sad now.
I know both my cups are empty. This is one somebody made for me.
I brain farted this morning and did not make a fresh pot in time to have it ready when I came in here. And then Dorothy just left and I didn't have her make me more. So now I just have to tough it out for
another. You just have to look at the bottom of your cup.
Yeah. There's little grains of nutmeg in there to make me feel worse.
You can just put your finger in there and just, you know.
Swirl it out. Yeah.
Get the nutmeg. Jack has become addicted to nutmeg in his coffee.
I have. It's all David's fault.
It is David's fault. You didn't know that for the last, like, however many years you've been around me with my super coffee maker, there's almost always been a nutmeg with a grater on top of it.
No, I've always liked nutmeg and, like, eggnog and shit around the holidays. I never even thought of throwing it in coffee. But then I did, like, after David did that to me, I did this deep dive on nutmeg. Nutmeg used to be, like, the spice of, like, everybody. There were special little graters that people carried around. There's, like, a whole, like, antique. John's like, I'm going to expand my hall of oddities. Like, there's all these different types of nutmeg graters that were, like, made with silver and shit like that. And it was, like, a status symbol. How cool was your nutmeg grater? But it was because it was a relatively affordable spice. It was kind of exotic. It goes on about everything. And you could carry around one piece of it for like a week or two. And that's all you needed was that one piece and that little grater. And so there's like websites. Like this is proof that there is a business in everything. There are websites dedicated to like when you find one of these things at like a flea market or something, you can find out where it came from, when it was made, when it was used, who produced it, what it's made out of, what its value is. Should you restore it or leave it as is? Like, there's a whole industry in this thing that nobody even knows exists.
No, it's great if you find the right one where the nut stores inside it.
Yeah. You can put it in
your pocket. Yeah, that's what David has probably.
Yeah.
His pocket nutmeg.
Townsend's has one, but it's like $85.
Yeah. No, you can find antique ones for like $5.
Yeah. Yeah.
$5, $10. Yeah. You can buy one on Amazon that's not as good for probably $20.
I'm going to make my own. Because I'm just the kind of person I am. You know, the microplane graters, like you bought one when I was up there for the glass.
For the egg yolks we didn't use.
I'm going to cut a small piece of it and lay it into like a piece of walnut or something that the nutmeg will fit in. So it's actually like one of the early type ones of them or something like that. Just because I can.
Yes.
And then people will ask to buy it and I'll say, I don't want to make them. And then somebody out there will tell us how they wish they had a business and they won't make them even though they could and sell them. That's how that's going to work.
John, you have a fan. I've owned the business for over 20 years, and I enjoy finding new mentors and motivation. I recently discovered SOE and John, and his hustle and business savvy has been extremely motivating.
Well, thank you.
Look at you making a difference.
John, ushering in the next generation of entrepreneurs. Well done.
He's 20 years in, man. That guy's got his shit together. Townsend is a wonderful YouTube channel. I know that was mentioned there. I enjoy watching. I can listen to his full content. And you don't have to pay attention to it. You can just listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a great delivery. He's, you know, John Pugliano, and David mm-hmm. says of him, like, the dude could read the phone book and I'd listen to him.
Yep.
Right. And that's how the Townsend guy is. He just has this voice. That's like, it's like a perfect, like if I was gonna have somebody read my books for Audible, it would be his voice. Like he's just got that great voice and great topics, you know, like the food stuff and all. Yeah. Their problem with their channel is the big fat dude, you know, no offense that he's fat or nothing, but like he's not Jay Townsend.
Yeah.
And you now like he's doing like 80% of the videos, and you're like, I don't care. It's not the same, man. Get the man back up on the screen here.
Another good voice is Aaron Mankey. He has a podcast called Lore. And it's lore and history, dark history kind of stuff, a lot of it.
Okay.
And then he's got a couple of shows, TV type shows he's done for Amazon Prime.
Okay.
And he does a traveling book where he actually reads and does some of his stuff live. But it's all dark history, like vampires, but what's the real medical and historic, you know, behind
why
the vampire
become what it was type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff to do with the ocean. Like it's just great. And he's got original classical piano behind each one. So when I just need to hear something, but not have to, you know, be worried or be concerned or really pay attention to it. It's just a good something different.
You know what your vampire comment made me think of? You ever thought about this synergy? Like if a police officer wants to come into your house, if an agent of the state wants to come into your house,
right,
they
don't
need
invite
to
them.
Spell an incantation that is a warrant, or they need to be invited in. And if you don't invite them in, they can't come in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless they have the spell incantation documentation paperwork to do so.
I just saw some stuff that the governor of Tennessee, the state of Tennessee, is going after homeschoolers. And people are very up in arms over this. I'm not sure what all there was to that, but they want to track how many hours and then start charging homeschool families with truancies.
Yeah, that's why I love Texas for homeschooling. It's basically I'm homeschooling my kids and that's it. It's sawed off and you don't have to ever talk to them again. Like and then going back to school because my grandkids went back to school this year. It's as simple as, they're coming back to school and done. And like it's completely seamless. And I would say that is one of the issues. If I was looking at moving states, even if I didn't have kids or my kids were grown, I would be looking at that because that tells you a lot about the mindset of the people that run the state. Do they view your children as your children or do they view your children as their asset?
Right.
Because
that's
what kids that become in school, man, they're a dollar sign. Schools get their money directly proportional to the number of asses in seats. And the truancy thing is, it bites the school in their economics. Like if a child misses more than a certain number of days in a semester, the school doesn't get the money for that student for that semester.
Yeah, ours was $65.
They don't care about your kids.
When I was in school, it was $65 a day was the federal money that would come through per student.
Wow. That's a while ago because that's when I was in school. We're the same
Matt,
age.
Matt Floyd says, when I hire somebody, I tell them we work half-hour days. They get excited. Then I tell them 12-hour day is half a day. Yeah. What's your product, Matt? What's your product or service? What do you guys do? Humble Mechanic. What's up, man?
Humble's in the house.
Half days and 12
hours. Hey, what do you think is the most lied about period in history?
Ooh.
Like all of them.
Yeah. I don't know.
What is truth?
Wow, that's deep.
It's a hard question, eh?
I need to use some crit prompting and get with AI on that one because if you said A, that would be one thing, but most?
Most, I know. That's the problem.
I don't know. My gut is, though, it is sometime prior to the wide availability to document things with video, right? Because okay. then you can spin any bullshit you want, and there's no record of it that a person can visually look at.
Yeah.
So
what
if you go
photographs though.
Yeah. Pictures are way less revealing than video.
That's true.
Right. I can take a picture. Have you seen a picture of the kid and he's got like somebody with a boot standing on his head?
Yeah.
Right. But then they pull back the image and he's got his hand in the boot and he's got it on his own head. And it looks like some poor little kid that like some stormtroopers just smashing his head into the ground.
Yeah.
And it's just him, you know, holding the boot to his own head. So to me, with a video, that's a lot harder. Be like, well, what's the context of this or whatever? I don't know. If I got a minute before and a minute after the thing, I have pretty decent context. So I don't know, man. Like, I know that, like, the whole narrative, and I'm not even talking about the people that are trying to, like, lift Hitler up or something. I don't mean that. But the whole narrative around the way shit was handled in World War II, there is a ton of bullshit there. You know, if you know anything about like Operation Paperclip and all, and that's the stuff that was above board that eventually came out. But I mean, do you guys know this? If you go back to the 60s and 70s, almost every NATO commander was a former Nazi. Almost every one of them. Go look. If you doubt, I mean, you're like, that's crazy. This Spherical guy, he's a conspiracy theorist. Go look it up. Go
well,
look
you don't
it
think
up.
The Earth is flat. So how conspiracy theory could you?
Yeah. Make? I mean, the Earth is flat is a conspiracy theory. The idea that, you know, we committed war crimes in World War II is not a conspiracy theory. There's documentation of things that we did that would be considered war crimes. Firebombing a city where the houses are made out of paper, that would qualify. That would that's like as many people as we killed with the atomic bombs in Japan. The year of bombing leading up to that, where we were firebombing, you know, these towns and cities in Japan. Mostly civilian areas. I'm not saying they didn't get the job done. I'm saying that, you know, we weren't telling people we were doing that while we were doing it. So even then, and so when you go back 500 years, I think that, like, there's no reason to even believe the narrative you're told is what happened at all.
What is the motivation for an accurate narrative in history to even happen? I don't know that it's ever happened. It is the motivation of whoever, quote unquote, wins to control
winner's
the narrative.
Right?
Narrative. So then how factual is it? Some.
I think all of us have had a taste of very benign power, like let's say running an internet forum or something like that. Right. And even with that incredibly benign power, somebody's just like they're not really breaking the rules, but they're just fucking irritating. There's a big PC that wants you to just go like Thanos and they're gone. And you don't have to deal with them anymore. Now, magnify that power 1,000-fold and tell me you wouldn't use it. Because we all alter narratives as it is. Talk to two people that got divorced and did so as pragmatically and as cooperatively as is possible in a situation like that about the marriage and what led to the divorce. You think you're going to get the same story from both of them?
No.
So do you think that the leader of an empire is going to tell the truth about how that empire got to where it is?
They may not be telling themselves the truth.
Yeah. And then how many things like that, the person telling you it believes it because they were told it, who was told it, like when did the change happen and how much do we believe the thing that we're being told? Like in one of my books, I talk about like the boiling frog thing. Like you put the frog in the water and slowly turn up the water and the frog will just boil and never try to get out. It's a preposterous, asinine thing. Reptiles and amphibians thermoregulate, right? So that's not a thing. But there's so many people that will defend that to the point of absurdity because they've heard it so many times and they've repeated it themselves. So then it becomes like this thing that doesn't even does it really matter to the world if the frog does or does not try to get out of the water? No. But because you said it, you become emphatically attached to the idea. Like, so the narratives we have about even things that are relatively short in history, like the American Civil War. And then that ambiguity opens up the other side where you started out with conspiracy theory today. Maybe you crafted it this way, Nicole, who knows? Where now you're feeding the complete lunatic fringe because you've been dishonest about the core reality.
Have you seen any of the shows Real History with Matt Walsh? Everybody know who Matt Walsh is?
I know who Matt Walsh is, but I haven't seen the show.
What is a Woman, right? That whole thing?
Yeah, that's what I've seen by him.
Okay, so he just did one few months ago called The Real History of Slavery. Pretty fascinating, the statistics and the numbers he gives versus what we perceive or have been told in, you know, government school history. He also just did one called Native Americans, talking about where the Native Americans resided and how, you know, we pushed them out and took all their land, wherein really, yes, they had massive swaths of land, but they migrated and were only on this land a month or two at a time. And the cannibalism and just the warring tribes and everything, and how it's been spun that, you know, we're oppressors and have taken all this land and just stole it from them. And, you know, the poor Indians, right? We're not even supposed to say Indians anymore, Native Americans. But if you have a few minutes, find one of those Matt Walsh movies. They're between 60 minutes and an hour. Very easy to listen to, and you'll be like, well, that can't be right. And then just kind of, you know, look into some of that compared, you know, with history that we believe or have been taught to believe. And then he comes out and says something completely opposite and has a lot of numbers and such with it.
Yeah. That actually brings up something that many of us were taught in school, and we weren't really taught it. It was inferred. I'm going to bring up a picture that many people that went to school, at least at the time we did, probably are familiar with here. And it's a picture of slaves being transported in the cargo hold of a ship. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was shown this and I was in like fourth or fifth grade, I took this image very literally. And what this shows is like the bottom hold of a ship, a cargo ship. And you see all these human bodies laying down like cordwood. And so in my mind, when I looked at this image, this is how we transported slaves from Africa. We loaded them into a ship like cargo, and they laid on their backs for the entire voyage. This is a preposterous notion. I'm not softening what was done at this time in any way. I'm saying that the perception was allowed to be perceived because it benefited the narrative. And that's a pretty benign version of it right there. In the end, they were just showing how many people would fit in the ship.
Right.
And, you know, what are you going to do? Draw them from above where you're like a circle for everybody? Like, that was a way an artist explained it when we didn't have photography, like, so, almost like a visual bill of lading. It's a horrible thing, but it isn't what it looks like. And yet we were allowed to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Because when everybody in the room went, oh, the teacher never said, hold on, let me explain to you what it really is. For all I know, they might have been dumb enough to believe it themselves.
So Ultra Reef had said that the Tuskegee Airmen was a made up story. I don't know about that. But the yellow fever in the blankets that were given to the Indians, right? There's no reference in history in writing it's nowhere in history. It appears in like 1960 is when the first telling of that took place, as far as he could find. And just stuff like that is what he was talking about. Slavery, how many African Americans were brought in as slaves versus all the other countries, how many white slaves were bought in and who actually owned them, and what percentage of black slaves were owned by black folks versus white folks, and where those were. It's just the numbers are not what we were told, or at least he is saying that. Yeah. Nothing he found supports anything that we've been told through government school history classes.
Did you ever see the movie Flags of Our Fathers?
I did not.
It's about the guys from the famous picture and statue of Iwo Jima where they're putting up the flag. And when you hear that story and you hear the history of World War II, you feel like, well, we won. Everything came out great in the end. We kicked ass. The country was completely patriotic through the whole thing. But by the time that went down, we had already had DE Day. We had this war dragging out with Japan. We didn't have an endless printing press for money. Wars were funded with war bonds. If you wanted to prosecute a war, you needed Americans to continue to put their money into war bonds. You needed them to accept rationing, right? You had to balance and people were beginning to have war fatigue at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody knew somebody that died or was severely wounded. And it was like, why are we still doing this? Basically, they can't hurt us anymore. And we were ready as a population on some levels to quit. And they took that iconic photograph. They literally retook it, and then they brought these guys home and they sent them around to essentially do fundraising. That's what that movie's about. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that it didn't happen. It was that the image that was created with it was fabricated to a degree and accentuated to a degree and meant to symbolize something that it really wasn't about in the moment at all. And again, this is recent. This is what, 75 years ago, right? So how do you trust anything that's 500 years old? I mean, I've looked into like the Columbus journeys, right? Like the whole thing, they were going to throw them overboard. They thought they were going to sail off the end of the earth. Like none of that shit was true. Basically, the first voyage was completely uneventful. It went exactly the way they planned, except they didn't get where they thought they would get. They ran into something in the middle. But it wasn't like people were afraid to go. They didn't think they were going to sail off the end of the earth. We actually knew the earth was not freaking flat at that point, unlike some people today. And that whole thing is just like this fabricated thing. I don't know if it's to entertain the imagination of children, get them to pay attention to 1492, Columbus sold the ocean blue. I don't know what the purpose is, but it's not reality at all.
Yep. Speaking of 1492, isn't it 1491 that's the book about the natives in North America and South America?
That is one of the most important books you can read.
That is such a good book.
And then 1493.
Yeah.
Which is like the fluctuations in the world that resulted from bringing the two hemispheres together. And you can come away with it like the 1493, when you come away, like the Industrial Revolution could never have happened without three things, but one of them's rubber. If you can't insulate wire, you can't move electricity.
Well, how much plantation and slavery stuff came off of the rubber from the rubber, you know, plantations, you know, offshore and such.
Long after we were done with slavery, that shit was still going on.
I mean, Ford,
of slavery in South America.
Yeah, and Ford built a whole colony around rubber there.
There was silver in Patagonia. Like all the Spanish people that lived in Patagonia at the time that were explorers and slave masters, they were all rich, but they couldn't buy anything. Everybody had tons of silver, but no stuff. They had to leave to buy it to spend their silver. They had so much silver. But they were getting the silver on the backs of natives, and the process they were using to extract it from the ore was basically killing the people doing the work. Like they had about a 3-year life expectancy, and they were just cycling through those people like they were a tool.
Well, I mean, that's still happening in the open pit mines, you know, in Africa and everywhere. I mean, what's the average lithium miner or even silver miner in open pit mines is 13 years of it, between 8 and 13 around the world.
But you came out of high school history, 1867 to present or whatever, right, with this idea that slavery as an institution was a uniquely American invention.
Right. It's still going on everywhere.
Still going on everywhere. And it was the de facto standard in the world up until about that period of time. And it took many forms. Some of it was in the feudal system. Some of it was direct slavery. Like standard operating procedure for warfare 200 years ago and back was you invaded, you killed all the men and boys of like military age. The ones you kept, you turned into slaves. You took their women, you took their children, and you co-opted them into your own realm. And the one way that a guy might survive is by willingly submitting as a slave to you. That was a standard doctrine from Asia all the way through Europe down into Africa. Yep. That doesn't mean it was right or okay. And when you say that, sometimes people think you're saying that. I'm just telling you what happened.
What was the
default state of mankind at the time.
Yeah,
and the people that get the most blame for it today are the ones that fucking ended it.
Yep. Look at Libya right now. Like Libya is a slave. It's of biblical proportion, bigger than it ever has been.
Somalia has the slave children that have become soldiers. The children, like 13, you're considered old enough. Here's the gun. Do what you're told or you're going to get shot.
That messes with a person's moral compass.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Art Bailey says there's a conspiracy theory about the UN wanting to empty out the southern hemisphere to do Banana Republic's version 2.0, hence the huge migration west.
I don't think they're going to empty it out. I think it's more about destroying the European culture.
World governance, you have to get rid of the United States. You have to get rid of Russia. You have to you have to get rid of all of it, right?
Yeah.
The family. You have to get rid of the family.
So you dilute your strong population with an immigrant population that you know you can already control or that you can create enough of a threat with them that the people that you're trying to replace will capitulate to things along the way, not realizing it's their own demise. And then you go in and you teach the young generation that your parents are really bigots because they want your country to stay the way that it is. Because that is the central message. And, all, you know, what refugees are welcome here. Like, what was it? Bono and U2 were screaming that in Ireland or something like that. It's like, you're going to go back to your fucking palace, dude, with a wall around it. You're not these people you're leading in this direction.
Yeah. How's the UK going with the refugees? How's that looking right now?
It's looking pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's looking pretty bad. So is Europe. I mean, France, whatever. Like, the only place in Europe that's not completely fucked up is from that is Ukraine so far because of the war. So nobody wants to go there. Yep. But I think that's going to flood with refugees the minute that ends, and Poland.
Look at Germany. Look at Ireland. I mean, Poland's the only one that didn't let them in.
Yeah. Poland and Hungary. And Hungary just made a big switch toward the liberal side of things. So we'll see what happens with that next. Come on, Nicole, you gotta bring us home now.
I was gonna say it might be about time to wrap up on that note.
Yeah.
I have other questions, but
go ahead. Let's do at least one more.
What's a rule you follow that most people disagree with?
Hmm.
I'm asking guys who don't like rules this question. That's the best part.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really ask. I mean, people disagree with things I do all the time. I can't identify one of them. I don't really ask their opinion generally. I just kind of do what we're doing.
I would say
speed limit.
I would say I hold myself to a higher standard than the legal system does on some things, and a lower standard on others. Like I think that most people disagree with holding themselves to a truly high standard, which is why they tend to achieve less than the results that they want to. And so the only person that can set a standard beyond what your employer and your government sets is you. And so I don't think most people agree with the rule of setting that higher standard for yourself simply because they don't do it.
Everybody thinks you're going to say getting up at 4 a.m., John.
I haven't been getting up at 4 a.m., guys. That's why you haven't seen a 4 a.m. video.
I was going to take the easy way out and say get up at 5 because that's what I do. But I don't know if it's really a rule. That's more like a lifestyle choice for me now. Like, I did discover this, though. If I let myself sleep into 6 a.m., my day doesn't go as well, and it's actually no easier to get up at 6 than it is at 5.
It's more energy with less.
Holding you back, right? Like, but I think you can – You get like John, I was always worried about, like, are you pushing this too far? Like, there is a certain amount of rest you need. And if you don't have that, things can start to go south for you.
Yeah, I feel more rested with less sleep. I perform better with less for sure.
Well, you sleep faster.
Yeah, sleep faster. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger said that. I think that most people are kind of NPCs. Like when you go to Walmart and just look at the crowd at Walmart, you'll see the person in there on a mission doing whatever they need to do. But a lot of people go to Walmart as a destination. And that is a lot of the people out there. You just look at them and you're like, those are people that 20 years ago, 30 years ago would have been in an asylum. Like, those are genuinely crazy people. And you see it. And there's still people out there wearing COVID masks and shit and wearing, you know, costumes and shit.
COVID costumes?
Yes. Yeah, there still are. There are still little whack jobs running around talking, you know, that are still getting vaccinated.
Yeah, they're like their 18th booster, and they're still wearing their mask that no one makes them wear with the nose sticking over the top of it.
Not only are they wearing the mask, they're wearing the same dirty-ass mask.
Oh, yeah, that looks like, bro, that's like circa 2020 right there. It's got some ass on it, man. I saw them in the airport just my flight home, Nicole. I had two on the airplane with us that were in masks.
Yeah, there's always somebody in a mask in the airplane.
It doesn't mean, and I get, like, there's people that have, like, immunocompromised systems, and I get that. But the people John and I are talking about, you look at them and go, well, there's something compromised, but it's not your immune system.
So before COVID, I would put a mask on if I felt a cold coming on before a flight on my way home.
Okay.
Because I wanted to reduce what I was putting in the air for other people. Yeah.
And now?
Now I'm just defensive.
Like you spew it everywhere, right? Yeah,
I generally don't go places when I think I have a cold. Like right now, you probably can hear.
Yeah.
There's some things going on. I don't know if it's from singing so much on Sunday or cold, but yeah.
That was always an Asia thing, like China, Japan did that. But I remember reading an article in 2012 about they said that this part of their culture of like when you're congested, you're sick, whatever, you go out in public, you have to, you wear a mask. It's a polite thing to do. That was the whole thing. But even back then, they were saying there's people that it turns into a mental illness for them. It becomes a safety, like a security blanket or something, like anonymity or whatever. It gives them comfort. And they were talking about it back then. So when this shit started for COVID, I'm like, watch. This is going to put that shit on steroids for some people. And there are people on social media right now, and I don't know, some of them it's probably just a hook, but like their whole life is dedicated to we should all still be masking in 2026.
Yeah, how to be COVID safe in 26. It's out there.
Yeah,
it's out there.
Go look up the hantavirus.
It's going on right now.
Because there's an outbreak on the cruise ship right now, and there's all of these articles comparing it to coronavirus.
Oh.
So
that's all you can find about it.
Hantavirus comes from the crystalline dry urine from rodents. It's typically one type of mouse actually found on the West Coast for the most part, old cabins and such. Hunter doesn't typically pass into human beings. So how is it running rampant on this cruise ship? Or did they go ashore and got this somehow? Like, what's going on there?
It's hard to believe that they have, like, these rodents on the ship because I guess it could be an older, not well cared for. But if you've ever been on a cruise ship, like, the level of maintenance and cleanliness is – it makes a hospital look like a dump. So I don't know.
Yeah, the only way I can think is they all got exposed off. I don't know that it can go human to human, I've heard, but rare. And then if you look at what the quote-unquote outbreak is, it's not a high percentage of the ship. But it's clear somebody got exposed, like they probably all got exposed in the same place.
I would tend to believe they're saying Hunter and it's something else.
That's possible too. They don't know, so they just pick something, or
they do know.
Yeah.
They've had confirmed tests according to reporting. So if the reporting is not lying, but you know,
right, exactly again, what I would say.
Like how many people are on a ship, and you know, what 10 or 12 people have it on the whole ship, and where did they put in at port, and where did the people go to eat lunch while they were in, you know, off the ship somewhere?
Yeah. I don't know. I have a cruise plan next year. I'm still going to go. I'm not going to worry about it. Like somebody said, wow, three dead already. I'm like, three? Like everything gets hyped. Like how many people died yesterday in car accidents?
Yeah.
Right. So here's, you cannot drive your car, right? Like, things need to be relative. Remember when they were saying like they had to add on to the emergency rooms, they had to put in tents, they had to bring in refrigeration, like, because so many people are dying. You're like, do you know how many people die on a daily basis all the time? What do we do with
that?
I can have a system for this. And it was all lies. There wasn't a single hospital in this country that added square footage because of COVID.
So
they
retrofitted the Performing Arts Center in Nashville to handle hospital settings for coronavirus. My renter on my property at the time was working on that.
Yeah.
Never used it, and then he was paid to take it all back out.
Yep.
Well, how?
Yep.
So how did all those nurses have all that time to do all the TikTok dances and shit? Right? They were killing people by over. They were upping the respiratory, the positive pressure.
They were overventilating.
We got a dude that was a TAC Response alumni who's a respiratory therapist that was working those, and he said they are killing people. They are overclocking. They're turning that machine up, and they're taking elderly people, and they are causing them to die. Where are all the homeless people dying, right? Where was all the people on the streets that didn't get any COVID, right? It just didn't happen. So hantavirus is primarily contracted by breathing in air contaminated with the virus, which is released when fresh urine droppings and nesting materials from infected rodents like deer mice is stirred up. Can also be transmitted by touching contaminated materials, then touching the mouth, nose, or through bites.
So, one, like you said, it could be some kind of, like, do they have some kind of shore excursion in common? Right? That would be one thing. The other thing would be, what if somebody that was on the cruise ship was kind of pissed and knew what to do? And, like, you don't need a bioengineered lab to do that. If you just find yourself some dried up mouse piss, like, you could theoretically spread it out on a buffet on a cruise ship. That's the thing that could have happened. Like, are there people sick enough to do that? Hell yeah, there's people who are way sicker than that.
I'm from Oregon. We had the Rajneesh.
I don't know what that is.
The Rajneesh was a religious cult in Oregon that there was going to be a vote at the town about, rezoning so they couldn't exist in their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And they came in and they spread some sort of virus at a buffet to make people sick so they couldn't vote. Yeah.
Wow.
That back, and they got caught.
Was that the one with the guy that was the leader that was like, before the people, of the people, and by the people, but the people are retarded? You know what I'm talking about, that guy?
I don't know. I know
he's
that
some like Indian looking dude or whatever, and it's a very old video, and there's a lot of it on social media, people like reposting and all. And as he said, they say to the government, of the people, by the people, for the people, but the people are retarded.
I don't remember that.
Nuts, but even a nut gets it right once in a while, man.
I don't know. I remember that incident because at that time, in order to be Rajneesh, you had to wear all red.
Okay, that's not
good. So if you were wearing red at school, you were called, you know, that's what you were made fun of for.
Okay.
Yeah. But now the Rajneesh don't wear red because they were ousted from Oregon and had to disperse, and they're not happy all the time now. It was a whole thing.
So they used biological warfare.
They use biological warfare to try to keep the town from voting them out.
With their bodies as a vector of the disease.
I don't remember how they did it, but there was something.
Yeah.
If you go through life just assuming that you're within arm's reach of somebody at any given time that's willing to do harm to you, you're probably going to be a little bit safer.
Probably. I would agree with that. I think one of the problems people have is they think they're so strong, so badass, whatever, that they think they're not in danger. And I'm going to tell you right now, a 14-year-old kid that you could beat the shit out of with one hand tied behind your back and still walk up behind you and put a freaking screwdriver in your kidneys.
Yep.
And sometimes it happens. And you can be a Navy SEAL and you've got the same problem once the screwdriver's in your kidney.
Yeah, or they just walk through life just not realizing that there is real evil there.
Yeah.
They've not experienced it, luckily, and they just assume that that's how everything is.
I don't know, man. Some people are very happy with that misconception, and that kind of person, I'll say, yeah, you're a better person than me, but the world you live in exists because of people like me, right? Like, it's people like me, and I mean, my type of person. There's millions and millions of us. That we are the check on that system from going into override. They only fear police so much. The fact that you pull some shit at any time, there could be somebody that will immediately end you for it, that I think holds in some of that psychopathy.
Well, there does seem to be more of that, just normal law enforcement contact that immediately goes to guns. I mean, you're seeing that, and maybe it's social media shows it to us faster, but it does happen.
It does definitely happen. There was just that guy that got shot yesterday in D.C. He had a gun on him. He got spotted by plainclothes Secret Service.
Yeah.
They called in D.C. Metro. They jointly went after him to question him. At that point, you got a gun on you, but you haven't actually done anything. So you're looking at a gun charge in D.C. Not the best thing in the world, but it beats being shot. So
this
what
is where
he
the kid
starts shooting? Kid gets hit, and I think he's dead. He definitely went to the hospital. I don't know if he's dead or not, but they shot the shit out of him. Like, why escalate that quickly? Like, that was probably stupid.
Well, whatever happened in D.C. with the guy with the revolver that shot the two guardsmen, and they ended him.
I haven't heard anything about that.
This happened months ago, and they ended him with a knife, just like at the military academy. The dude walked in and went to gun, and they ended him with a knife also.
Oh, yeah,
they couldn't have guns, right?
Hard.
There's been three or four of these incidences. Like, what's like whatever happened. How about the dude with the Tesla truck that blew up in front of Trump's hotel in, what was it, Vegas? Where the fuck did that go? Like, you haven't heard shit about any of that.
No, but I thought he blew himself up, didn't he? He was inside it.
Well,
when it went off.
A lot of people say he did not blow himself up. That truck self drove itself there and went off.
But the thing was, that didn't actually do the damage that they intended because the truck was so strong. A blast went straight up. It didn't go into the building.
Yeah. There's crazy shit around the Las Vegas shooter. Around the Las Vegas shooting. Yeah. Like, you haven't heard
and the Nashville
more about
one.
That. And the dude who was Nashville chief of police one. There was the chief of police when all the fires happened in Hawaii years later.
The Vegas one, what always got me was, why would you take that many guns up to your hotel room? How long did you, like, you need one or two guns and lots of ammo.
Yeah.
Right. And this guy supposedly carried, like, it was something like 24 freaking rifles in cases that he carried. And there's no video footage of this dude taking anything to his room in a hotel that's a casino. Have you been to a hotel that's a casino, guys? Do you know what you see everywhere? Cameras.
Cameras.
I mean, literally everywhere. Every hall, not just in the casino, on the floor, in the lobby, in the hallways, on the freaking elevators. There are freaking cameras everywhere, and there's not one freaking frame of this dude.
And there was, like, multiple shootings at multiple hotels simultaneously at the same time. How about the helicopters turned off all their lighting? How about all the runway lights went off on the runway? Like, there's just a ton of, if you have not heard any of this, just watch any random video on the Las Vegas shooting, and it will blow your mind.
See, my problem with that is then you go into, am I looking at reality or am I down to the world of the mud flood and the orphans and the power generation in Monaco? Like, you know?
Yeah.
And I even think, to be clear, I think the whole power, like free energy, power generation, magnetism, some version of that may very well be in our ancient history, but it's not 150 years ago.
Yeah, there was a Saudi prince there. There was an assassination attempt on his life. There was a shooting with the security team on the hotel behind that. There was multiple shootings that took place.
Wow. Didn't know that.
Yep.
So he could have been.
Yeah, there was a ton of it. There was, in fact, people killed. A lot of people say it was staged, but there's a man that built a beautiful home right up here. His wife is an orthopedic surgeon over here in Paris, Tennessee, and they never resided on the property. She actually buried him on the property when he was brought and flown into Nashville. Like, I don't doubt that people were killed for real there because he was actually buried here.
No, I think that's usually bullshit when they say that was fake. Nobody was killed. But that's like the people that will run an op like that. If it is an op, they don't mind killing people. Like, killing people actually makes the ops sell better. So I don't think they would, you know, like, the people that say, like, the plane never hit the Pentagon or whatever, okay, where'd the plane go? I'm not even saying you're wrong. Where'd the plane go? Where'd the people go? Well, they never died. Well, where are they? Are they, like, island, like, Lost or something? You know, remember the TV show Lost with the black smoke? Like, is that where'd they go? Or Manifest? I don't know if you ever watched a show called Manifest, but it was this plane that, like, disappears in a storm. And then it lands and it's like 10 years later, but the people didn't age at all. Like, is that what happened? Cause I don't buy into stuff like that, but I don't trust the narrative. That's the other side of it.
Yeah. His brother had,
question was so good.
Yeah. His brother had more child porn on a Windows 95 computer than a 95 computer could support from a set storage perspective. Yeah. There's all kinds of weird shit. And the chick that had $120,000 deposited, his girlfriend or whatever, there's just so much weird shit with that. And then just like, no, we're not going to talk about this anymore.
What didn't happen?
The Sandy Hook thing with, like, I'm not talking about all the Alex Jones shit. What I'm talking about is
I saw one yesterday.
Actual emergency response audio into the dispatchers and all. They found a second dude in camouflage. They had him face down on the ground in the woods on the backside of the school. And then it completely went away.
All the crisis actors, you have people saying that my child was killed, but they also have that dude in a SWAT uniform with an AR, right? There's like four different sets, multiple mass shootings where these same actors have been present, just like David Hogg. How was David Hogg at so many different shootings over the time?
Yeah. That's individual human nature, though, to like accentuate things and lie for publicity. But some of the stuff seems way more structured to me than like one off one person claiming they were there. The shooting at the nightclub in Florida would be another example of something like that. There was just some things that just didn't add up. And then there were people that I absolutely know were hurt. They were shot. There were people that died. But it seemed like there were people who were there to add to the, like, crisis actors, like you're saying, or the Oklahoma City bombing. Remember way, way back then? It's like 96 or something like that, or 95. That building gets blown up. There was a doctor and a police state trooper who were working together saying there's some other – they weren't saying it didn't happen. They're saying there's other shit here. And the doctor said – he's on record with this. He went to the building to help. An FBI agent came up to him and asked him to put like bandages on him and shit. And he looked at the guy and he said, there's nothing wrong with you. I'm trying to help people that are actually hurt. And the guy said, just do it. And he told him to F off. Well, that dude ended up dead in a private plane crash, which happens. But the next day, the cop ends up dead 100 yards from his cruiser with his hands tied behind his back with wire, shot in the head with his own gun. Half his blood in his cruiser.
Yep.
And it was ruled a suicide.
Some shooter kind of shit.
That's not conspiracy. Now, how it happened and what happened, there's all conspiracy around that and who really did it. But what I just gave you, the parts I gave you, that all happened. That's all public record. And the FBI went the next day to the bank where these two guys were keeping all their documents in a safe deposit box, told the bank we need it. The bank just lets them straight in, hands it to them, and it all disappears and goes away.
Because banks do that.
I have trust issues. I'm just going to say, at this point, I have trust issues.
Well, guys, we're up on 2 hours. You about ready to wrap?
Yeah.
Sauce has an MRI today.
Ah.
Yeah.
For the shoulder?
Yeah. They canceled it last week, so.
Okay.
I was on my way in. I was like, I just psyched myself up for the claustrophobia. Now I have to do it again. Anyway. How can people find you, John?
SOETacticalgear.com is the website. I do a live on special operations equipment every night in Central. We jump on, show product that was made, and then talk about whatever we want to talk about. Pretty easy to find. Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok.
Sign up for their email and you'll get special notices.
Sign up. Yeah, sign up for my email. Buy a shirt. Buy some stuff.
Yeah.
Just come hang out. Have some conversation.
Yep.
I am Jack Spiergo, host of The Survival Podcast at thesurvivalpodcast.com. We have over 3,800, about to hit 3,900 episodes of the show going all the way back to the year 2008. We cover all aspects of self-reliance, independence, and liberty. And we teach all the things from the homesteading to the off-grid to the aquaponics to the entrepreneurship, building businesses, total lifestyle design. Come check us out. If you have never heard of us, you just might like us.
And I'm Nicole Soss from the Living Free in Tennessee podcast, where you can hear about all of the hijinks we're getting into at the Holler Homestead, as well as building the life you choose on your terms. But most importantly, you can buy Holler Roast coffee at hollerroast.com, which gets better every year as I become a better roaster. So check that out, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks for hanging out, guys.
You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have.